Welcome back into the Red Zone Podcast. My name is Colton Bartholomew, UW Football Beat Reporter here for the Wisconsin State Journal, joined by columnist Jim Polzine, and we're back to talk about another disappointing, lopsided at the end loss for the Badger football team. Another kind of yeesh performance from the Badgers, and I think this one might be a little bit worse. I guess it's similar to the Notre Dame one, where the minute Wisconsin got some momentum, you go into halftime, you're thinking, hey, Wisconsin's finally got something rolling here offensively. Graham Mertz looks good. And then he gets hurt first series of the third quarter, and then things kind of unraveled. It was just kind of, it reminded me of that Notre Dame game where it's like, man, they finally got some momentum. Like, you know, a little bit of disappointment where you kick the field goal to go up three, then you let the kick return, and it all kind of goes to hell from there.
That's,
so
yeah, and that's the one thing is like when this team falls behind, you just kind of know it's over, right? Or you know it's going to be a real uphill climb, even if the deficit's only three or four at the time. This, they just have such a hard time scoring, and so you know it's going to be unlikely that they come back.
Yeah, and you know we're going to talk about some of the larger themes, you know, going to looking at how they salvage this season, because that's where we're at right now. It's kind of weird to think that we said before the before the year on podcast that we're going to know in a month where this team's at, and where they're at's bad, right? This is it's a bad spot to be in. You haven't won a Power Five game yet. Got some chances now coming up here in the Big Ten West. So we're going to talk about kind of salvaging the season here, the Illinois game coming up, and then making our Big Ten picks for the week. I don't know what we have to do to convince you people, but all we do is make you money. And
all you do.
Well, hey, you're right behind me. So it's all we do is make you money. Continue to listen to us. Actually, it's a small slate for the Big Ten, but some great games here in the Big Ten this week to pick. So we'll be doing all of that right after this. All right, Jim. So let's start off talking about salvaging this season. And I think, you know, when you listened to our podcast last week and then you watched your performance again on Saturday, the offensive line is the number one problem on this team. You know, you look at Graham Mertz's performances haven't been great up to this point. The running game hasn't been great up to this point, and the common theme there is the offensive line is not doing its job. And you've been around this program a lot longer than I have. What did you think of Logan Bruss and Tyler Beach, the two senior tackles, the two, you know, pretty unquestioned leaders of that group, coming out and doing basically a joint press conference? I know they were, you and I both requested Logan Bruss. I know multiple other reporters had requested Beach individually, and they came out and said they wanted to do it together and basically field all the questions together. What was your kind of read on that?
Yeah, I think it makes sense with the more I thought about it that, hey, if we're going to be getting the same questions anyways, let's do this together and let's show some sort of united front. I mean, I'm sure they hear the criticism. How can they not? So I think they wanted to kind of show some unity, be there for each other when asking questions. I thought they were both good. Like, nobody was defensive or anything. But I just, you know, it's hard to believe we've gotten to this point. Like, even though I think we sat, you know, we stood next to each other in training camp and wondered aloud how good this offensive line was going to be, I didn't expect it to be this poor. I just didn't see it getting to this point. And we can get into the reasons why we think it has. But it's clearly not the only issue on offense, but it's one of the biggest ones. And it needs to get turned around. This program has always, if it's a good team, it has a good offensive line, and obviously it's gone the other direction this year.
Yeah, and it's just so wild to think about because for how many years did you cover this program and watch, like, hey, at least they can run the ball.
Right.
Hey, the offensive line's still going to give them 5 yards a carry, and they can do some things off of that. It's gone right now. And I thought it was interesting. I mean, Logan Bruss is a little more quiet a guy than I think Tyler Beach is naturally. Beach seemed to take the lead on a lot of the questions. But I think both of them had the same kind of message where it was, hey, we know we're not playing well. We know we're making a lot of mistakes. We know we have to get it corrected. And they kept using the word accountability. And that sounds nice and everything. It's just, how do they then, and I asked them this, like, how do you transfer, you know, I appreciate and I believe that they want to be holding each other accountable. I asked them kind of how does that process start? And they say, you know, it's the film room. It's calling guys out in practice. It's making sure that we're practicing well. I kind of got the implication, you tell me if I'm wrong, Jim, I know you're right there with me, but kind of got the implication that they haven't been practicing as great as it sounds, you know, because we don't get to see it now, but that they haven't been having very good practices in that way. So I just, overall, I was kind of impressed, but then also, like, continued my worry is still there with that offensive line, because I just don't think this is a situation where this gets fixed in the 5 days before, or the 6 days between games. Like, I don't know how much you can change when, you know, you can leave the depth chart if you want or not. We'll see when they actually get to the game on Saturday, but there's no changes. This is like they're going to put out the same starting five if you believe the depth chart.
Yeah, I was going to say that too. Like, it's hard for me to believe this is all just going to change overnight and that everything's going to go back to being okay.
Right.
I mean, let's face it, the opponents, there's a stretch here where the opponents, it lightens up, the schedule lightens up, and they're not playing ranked teams, and, you know, they've gone against some pretty good defensive fronts. Mm-hmm. So I think that's going to lighten up. But you used to be able to count on this team putting up 200, 250 rushing yards, and I just think it's going to be a grind. I think it's going to be a struggle all the way. I just don't see that changing. When they struggled against Penn State, I thought you could kind of put Beach and Bruss's injuries in camp as an excuse and say, hey, they're going to need some time to,
you know,
warm up and get in the season. That's just not – we're a month into the season now.
Yeah, we're too far away. That's
right.
Not...
And just haven't seen enough improvement. So I think that's the frustrating part, is that there just hasn't been a – step forward every week like you'd hope, and you know, I don't see a giant step forward coming.
Yeah, and the thing that they both those guys said, the words they used were that they got to draw a line in the sand, and they kept referencing a different mindset. I know, Jim, you asked them about, like, you know, what is that mindset? What's coming? And they kind of hinted at some things that they're going to change on offense, and Graham Mertz did as well when we were talking to him. And to me, as I kind of read through all the quotes and started putting some things together, I came up with a couple ideas. Now, the number one thing I think, and this is, I know people have been complaining about this all year, I think this rotation's got to stop. Like, maybe, or whoever their five is that Joe Rudolph, Paul Chris, and the staff believes is the best five, I think is going to be out there and they're just going to ride with them. They did throughout the Michigan game until Chase Wolf fumbled on a sack. And then they made some changes, and then there was a second group that played pretty much the rest of the way. But I think that they're going to eliminate that rotation, kind of get that looking over your shoulder feeling away from some of these guys like a Jack Nelson or a Josh Elsner, who, let's just be fair, they haven't been performing well enough that they shouldn't be looking over their shoulders. Right. But at the same time, I can imagine as a player it's tough to, you know, have confidence and succeed when you're kind of thinking, hey, any mistake I make, I could get pulled. You know, we'll see what the result there is if that's the case. And I think the other thing, and Paul Chris talked about this a little bit, or, you know, said that this guy's playing well enough to deserve it, but I think we're going to see a lot more Braylon Allen in the backfield. I've been, you know, you can read on Madison.com my analysis after games and post-game stuff. Things that Ches Malusi has done in the last couple of weeks, that's not starting running back caliber for the Badgers. When you talk about some pass protection stuff and then some effort stuff, in terms of that last pick six against Notre Dame, it really could have saved his team a pick six there with a little more effort on a tackle. But I think the fact that the rushing game's not going, he's not, you know, elevating a poor offensive line like we're talking about, I just think you've got to put Braylon Allen out there kind of like a battering ram. Like, hey, you're probably going to get contacted at 2 yards. Make it four for us, right, by running through a tackle, or, you know, at least falling forward. Because that's just not happening enough. Braylon Allen's physically a guy that can do it. And I've been of the mind all year, since Braylon Allen is becoming a true running back for the first time, not just, hey, you're the best athlete on the field in high school, here's the ball. That's what he did in high school. Right. He's becoming a true running back, having to learn all these other things. It would be tough to put him out there. But they're not getting great pass protection from any of the backs anyway. So you've got to just put the guy that gives you the best chance to get yards in the backfield and see what happens, I think.
Yeah, they've had way too many zero-yard gains, right? I mean, there's just far too many of that. And I like the idea of going to Allen. I just the frustrating part is they just have not been able to settle on a guy. Berger has not been able to get on the field consistently. Isaac Garendo was completely lost in the shuffle last week. They've got four guys, and I don't know if they know – really, week to week, who they want to be the guy. And that's mm-hmm. a problem. And that's, for as much attention as we've paid to the quarterback and offensive line struggles, which deserve all the attention we've been giving them, the fact that they don't have a legit great tailback, I think, is another issue with this offense. Like, somebody asked me on Open Gym this week, like, it was, can Paul Chris take any lessons from Matt LaFleur when you watch the Packers in that offense. I'm like, well, here's the lesson. The Packers have a great quarterback.
They have one of the best ever.
They have arguably the best receiver in the game right now.
Mm-hmm.
And they have not only a really good tailback, they have a really good backup tailback, you know?
Right.
So, yes, talent makes a play caller look so much better. And when you lack talent, it's going to make you look so much worse as a play caller. So I think, you know, again, four games in, settling on a lineup and settling on guys and just going with them, I think is probably the way to go these next 3 weeks. It's just get some consistency and continuity.
Yeah, you have to find that. And, you know, switching to the defensive side a little bit, because as many tough spots as they were put in with some turnovers by the offense and some bad special teams play, I don't think the defense had a very good game. I think they were solid against Michigan. They stopped the run. It's wildly impressive. I don't mean to gloss over it, but the way that they're taking teams' run games away, it's almost like you take it for granted from the outside. You just know teams can't run on you.
Right.
And then you see consistently it's double moves. It's let's go max protect because we know they're going to blitz us and know they're going to come after the quarterback and then try to get one-on-one down the field. And there are a lot of teams that feel like they can win those battles more consistently or at least enough that are going to put points on the board. And so far they've been right. Jim Leonard in his press conference on Monday said that he feels like the cornerbacks don't get enough, you know, credit for how they're playing, giving the front the opportunity to play as aggressively as they are, because in his mind they are in good coverage enough and they take things away enough that teams can't consistently get there. And you look through the numbers, he's right to a point. The Badgers defense has only been on the field for 74 of the 102 points that have been scored against the Badgers this year. 30 of those have come off punts, kickoffs, or non-turnovers. So really, the Badgers defense has only let up about 12 points per game when they haven't. The other team hasn't got the momentum of a turnover and all these things. But I think pretty much all of those are big play passing game down the field. So I understand Jim Leonard's point on the side of the corners are playing well for long stretches of the game, but then there are still those 5-6 plays a game that the other team gets something going down the field and that kicks everything off. We saw a big flea flicker touchdown against Michigan, another one down the field against mostly backups, the Jahan Dotson touchdown. There are so many examples. I understand that's the decision Jim Leonard's making. Hey, the one way you're going to beat us is deep down the field where the catches and throws are harder, and we're going to take our risks there. But teams are consistently getting that to work, and I don't know. What do you think of just his statement of the cornerbacks aren't getting enough credit?
Yeah, I see the point he's making. I disagree to some degree. Like I think, I don't remember, I have the numbers in front of me right now, but it's been double-digit big plays in the passing game, 20-plus. I think like it's somewhere in 8 to 10 range.
Mm-hmm.
That's too many. It's not a lot when you consider how much teams are throwing deep. Like, the completion percentages are very low, right? Like, but it's just happening enough that it's a problem. If you can cut that number from, like, 10 to 6, I think the defense looks so much better, and the secondary looks so much better. Now, it's really hard to criticize this defense.
Yeah, exactly.
Considering everything it has to do. It has to almost be perfect every week. And that's not fair to that defense. We're nitpicking to some degree that they're giving up too many pass plays. They're not getting enough interceptions. But I will say, like, that's the only way this team's going to win right now is if those two things happen. If they cut down on big plays, and if they maybe get a pick six or a fumble recovery for a touchdown early in game and get a lead. This defense just hasn't gotten a chance to play with a lead at all. I think the stat I used yesterday, it's like less than 3 minutes in the three losses where where this team's been leading, and never by more than like 3 points. So it completely changes the way you can play defensively, how aggressive you can be. And I'd like to see this team get a lead and try to build on that.
Yeah, and to your point, they've had opportunities for pick sixes. Yes. The third play against Notre Dame, I believe Jim Leonard was talking about the play that Colin Wilder ended up breaking up on a wheel route, but he said that he thought that could have been a pick six on the other side, and, you know, would have been a tough play, would have been a good play. But
yeah,
like
he wasn't
saying,
looking at the ball. I mean, I remember watching that live and then watching it again. It probably wisely, his first priority is to break up that pass. But had he been looking up, I think he does intercept that, and I don't know if he returns it for a touchdown. But yeah, it's stuff like that. And like again, we're grading them on a curve to some degree because they have to be perfect.
Yeah, I was about to say, I think they're playing at a B-plus to an A-minus level. And for this team to have a chance the way their offense is playing, it's got to be A-plus.
Right.
And that's unfair, but that's just the situation they're in. You can read on Madison.com. I have a story about that kind of thought process going on in the team right now. Like, the defense knows they're carrying too much of the load. We're seeing the fatigue factor later in games. That's why these fourth quarters, I think, are going where they are. The defense is out there far too much. It's just getting to a point where the way that Caesar Williams, senior cornerback, described it was they got to play like the 2000 Ravens. And that's one of the greatest defenses of all time with Ray Lewis and too many Hall of Famers. So that's a bar that's really kind of unrealistic, but that's almost where they have to set themselves right now to give their team a chance to win.
Yeah, and I feel bad for them. It's got to be mentally and physically exhausting, you know, physically because you're on the field so much, and be mentally to know that you just have to be perfect.
Yeah, the stress of, hey, we're on a high wire every single play. Because like you said, the second we get down, we're, you know, kind of SOL. And that's not a way to play football. That's not the way that, you mentioned feeling bad. I honestly have sympathy for guys like Jack Sanborn and Vaughn Hicks, Caesar Williams. I'm not saying that these guys were bona fide, definitely going to get drafted guys. So they're getting benefit of having more tape to put on to get the NFL for next season. But they came back with the idea of this team being a lot different than what they've had the first month. And I can't imagine the mental, hey, did I make the wrong decision? Should I be, you know, trying the pros right now? Like, that's got to be adding to all this, too. It's just got to be tough.
Hendricks is another guy I'll throw in there, not because of the pro aspect, but just those guys consistently show up for post-game interviews and every Monday and answer questions. And it's like, I just want to tell them, like, you know, like, I feel like after interviews, telling them, hey, we really appreciate this. Like, right, we know it sucks to come in here week after week and answer questions when, if we're assigning blame for losses, you guys don't deserve much of the blame, right?
Right.
But the fact that they do that and they're stand up about it, you know, it does make our jobs easier and we appreciate it.
Yeah. And I'll say that too. I mean, obviously he's well compensated for doing so, but Paul Christ, after a lot of these losses, is doing the same thing. And you're not seeing that around other, you know, high ranked teams. I think it was it Florida this week? Dan Mullen.
They shut down.
Yeah. They got shut down in about 4 minutes, which was a joke, but, you know, transitioning a little bit, looking forward, we'll talk about this Illinois game in a second here, but looking at the big picture this season, a bowl game's not guaranteed. Like, you and I talked on the podcast and privately, like, I truly thought this team was get to Indianapolis, see what happens, but more than likely a Rose Bowl with the talent they had and everything. I don't know if they're going to make a bowl game. Like, all right, so obviously you're sitting at 1-3 right now. You have to win this week, and then honestly I think the next two to have a realistic shot, and that's beating Illinois, that's beating Army, and that's beating Purdue. That's two true road games. That's not like a guarantee.
This team hasn't played a true road game yet. That's the crazy thing. They're 1-3 without having played a true road game yet.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm not saying that these are guaranteed, but to have a realistic chance at the bowl, I think you've got to win these three games. And then, again, I'm on the same mindset. I think you lose to Iowa, even though it's here. Just the way that Iowa's playing defense, the way they're creating turnovers, and the way this offense is turning the ball over, I just can't see the formula for Wisconsin winning that game. And then, let's say all of that happens, right? Wisconsin's then sitting at 4-4. Excuse me, you're right. And then they have to win two of these games at least to make a bowl. At Rutgers, home against Northwestern, home against Nebraska, and at Minnesota. The only one I think you can realistically put in the win column on paper right now is that Northwestern game, just because of how poorly Northwestern's playing. The rest of those games are true toss-ups. If not, the other team might be favored.
I wouldn't say just those last four. I would say from here on out, the only game I feel really good about is Northwestern.
Sure.
So you're right. I mean, the bowl game is not guaranteed, and it's going to be an uphill climb. And I know, like, it's easy for us to kind of look big picture. Those guys just have to be concerned about winning at Illinois this week.
Right.
But yeah, it's suddenly become kind of a scary situation. And like, there's probably people out there thinking, who cares? Who cares if they miss a bowl? Here's why I think it matters. The bowl streak, I think, is worth keeping up, whether you're 6-6 and playing in some crappy bowl or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's important. It's good to keep that streak alive. More importantly, those bull practices, developmental wise, have always been important.
Yeah.
You know, you want those practices leading into the bowl game.
You've heard it from players and coaches. Yeah. Guys are merging those, and that springboard them into maybe a bowl performance or spring practices, something like those extra 2 weeks of practices. I mean, this is not just from reporters regurgitating this. This is players and coaches saying, like, hey, these are the times where, you know, let's take, for instance, a guy like Nolan Rucci on the offensive line, somebody that everybody wants to see eventually get some playing time. They're not going to give Tyler Beach every single rep of those 2 weeks. He's a veteran guy. He's been out there enough. Like, those are reps for him against the first team defense, and they really start taking strides forward. It's vitally important. You're so right on that.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's why it matters. But getting there is increasingly becoming a problem. We'll be better able to answer that over these next three if they do indeed win all three. I think then suddenly, you know, not that turns around the season, but if you're 4-3, and then maybe that Iowa game is, at least you can give them a chance of winning it. Maybe something happens in these next 3 weeks where they start to figure some stuff out. But just getting to that point, I chalked those up as three wins before the season started, and I just can't say that confidently now.
No, I'm with you. And I think you said it really well there. Like, if they were to win those three games, something had to get figured out, and then we can start evaluating the rest of it from there. But, yeah, what that ends up being, either it's the run game and they get back to, or they somehow kind of fix some things up front to get back to a ground and pound team, or maybe it's what we saw in those two drives against Michigan, where it's shotgun, three-step drops, get the ball out of Mertz's hands, get guys like DK the ball, get guys that Kendrick Pryor the ball in space, and just let it go, and we'll see what the solution is. But you're right. If they win these three games, some solution will have to have been found that we can kind of apply going forward. All right, so we've talked a lot about the big picture and the future here, but now let's talk about this week. And, Jim, we come into this season, obviously they have these huge games to start off the year, but I think a lot of us in the media at least thought, hey, that Week 5 game against Illinois is going to be, you know, such a crazy atmosphere, the going to Illinois, homecoming for them, the whole BLMO reunion. I don't hear anybody talking about that or caring, really.
No, not at all. I mean, I'm going to be writing about it later in the week, so I was asking questions about it yesterday. But Brett Bielema went out of his way in his news conference to kind of just say, hey, I understand why questions are being asked, but this is Illinois versus Wisconsin, not me versus Wisconsin. And that's the right way to say it. Part of it, too, was, you know, I don't have a lot of enthusiasm about this storyline because I wrote about Brett down in at Media Day in Indy in July, so that, you know, that's you know, it feels like it's kind of been covered to some degree. Another thing is, like, these players, for the most part, don't care or know him. Like,
right.
You know, I thought some of the Wisconsin-grown guys, the Wisconsin-born guys, the state guys, might have had some opinion on him since they grew up watching this program and are familiar with him, but there wasn't much reaction from them yesterday.
No, all of also, them. It was like across the board. Right. It was wild just kind of seeing, like, I don't know, he's a coach.
He's interesting. Like, one guy said he's interesting. I'm like, oh, that's about as good as I can get. But I think it also speaks to just where this program's at. Like, there's bigger stories and problems and issues to fix than who's going to be coaching the other team this week.
For sure. You know, looking at this Illinois team and how they've been playing, I don't think any one part of their team is, like, great, and their record reflects that. They're 2-4, and they only won one Power 5 game. But I also don't think any of their teams, like, outlandishly bad. Like, I just think they're a very middle-of-the-road average team. And then when you look at the rest of the Big Ten, like, I know the records aren't going to be great down in the bottom half where of the Big Ten standings this year, but there's not as many cakewalks this year. Yeah. Like, even at Purdue, like, Illinois played Purdue last or 2 weeks ago, and Purdue won a tight one there without their best player. Purdue hung with Notre Dame for a long time until their best player went out, David Bell. So I just think that this Illinois team, their record's not looking great and the stats don't look great, but, like, you watch them. They play hard. They do really well on the lines. Like, this is not an easy game by any stretch.
No, and it's always kind of a dreary place to go play in. That stadium's not, you know, there's nothing special about it. It's always been kind of a weird game. I don't know. I think it's going to be a struggle, and obviously it always is for the Wisconsin offense, but I do think it's going to be kind of a grinded out game, and the defense is probably going to have to, you know, do its part and maybe score, and, you know, then and the offense will be have to do just enough.
Yeah. I do want to caution people because I think it's going to get talked about far too much. Chase Brown's coming off a 250-yard game against Charlotte last week. Throw that out the window.
Yeah.
Charlotte does not have a single defensive front seven guy, in my opinion, that could play in the Big Ten. Like, ignore that. Do not. And the stats are kind of his stats are kind of blown out of proportion in that way. The thing that I don't mean to discredit Chase Brown because I do think he's a good player, but I just ignore the stat part. And what we've seen from this Wisconsin front is they're not going to get run on. Like, bar anything else, they're not going to get run on. The thing that I think is really interesting about Illinois' defense, though, is because we saw it happen here at Wisconsin not that long ago. They're transitioning from a 4-3 to a 3-4. And for some players like an Owen Carney, it's doing wonders for him because he gets a wider set on a tackle and he gets to use his athleticism and get after the pass rusher or get after the quarterback as a pass rusher. The rest of the defense, though, it's hurting. Their two interior guys are not used to what they're being asked to do, or their one interior guy's not used to what he's asked to do. Jake Hansen, their inside linebacker, is playing pretty well. A little bit less space that he has to cover, but their other linebackers aren't. It kind of mirrors what happened at Wisconsin, just I think with a little bit less talent up front than what Wisconsin had when they switched from 4-3 to 3-4.
The other thing I was thinking yesterday is, and I wanted to ask Graham Mertz this, but there were so many other health questions, but do you think he goes back and watches that game from last year, even though it's different scheme, different coaching staff? I was wondering if he'd watch it just for
mentally
kind of a good feeling vibe, right?
Yeah, right.
He was so good in that game.
There are a lot of the same guys on the field, right. So it wouldn't make sense, like, tendency-wise, but they were just being asked. You're right, though, because they're being asked to do such different things this year.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't think there's any – like, it doesn't make any sense to go back and watch it from a schematic standpoint and you know, getting fresh eyes on something like that. But I just think, like – and I wonder if – not just this week, if he ever goes back and watches that game and says, huh.
That was
it's
cool.
It's in there somewhere, right?
Yeah.
Like, I can do this, and here's how I did it, and just – get some sort of, you know, just some mindfulness, some positive mindfulness stuff.
You would think. I mean, I think he's going to go back and watch those two scoring drives against Michigan, feel the same way. Because I honestly, and I wrote about this on Sunday, those two drives, the way that he handled pressure, stepped up into it, made a lot of throws while getting hit or just about to get hit, that was the best he's looked under pressure all year. And I would honestly say back until that Illinois game, right. Like that was – really, really impressive. And obviously that's not sustainable. Like, you get lit up like he did. There's not a lot of quarterbacks that are going to stay in the game from there. But I think those two drives were what we, I think, can expect once Graham Mertz and this offense kind of clicks and they get some protection. Because that was really impressive to me how he kind of finally just said, like, screw it. I'm getting hit. I'm just going to let it fly. And it worked.
Right. Yeah, and I would – somebody else asked me about this. I would have loved to have seen more than two, right? Like more than two drives. Like, you just want to see it more consistently to see if it's real or if it's just, you know, an aberration.
Those two drives also came after four straight 3-and-outs, and they were down 10-0.
That's the thing. Like, as bad as this offense has been, that four drive stretch where I think they had minus 2 yards total.
It was obsessive.
That was as bad as I've seen in a long time around here.
Yeah, it was rough. One closing thought on this Illinois game, we'll get to picks. If Wisconsin comes out flat, which they did back in 2019, they're going to lose. Illinois, Brett Bielema saying all the right thing in public. You know he's trying to fire up his guys and get a win over Wisconsin. You know he's going to get them trying to hype it up. Like, hey, a lot of you guys were here in 2019 when you beat them, and that was a way better Wisconsin team. All true. It's a homecoming game in Illinois. They get really hyped about that. Like, Wisconsin has to come out with a lot more energy. Like, Kendrick Pryor said it after the game, and I think he's right. They continually dig themselves holes that they're trying to fight out of the rest of the game. They can't do that against teams that, on paper at least, do not have the same talent they do. It hasn't obviously all come together for Wisconsin, but they just cannot do that in this game because I don't think that this team's equipped right now to continue to fight out and come back in a game if they start out flat.
Yeah, I completely agree. The one thing I'd like to see is we haven't even discussed special teams much.
Yeah,
I don't know that I'm expecting a big play in special teams. What I think Wisconsin needs more than ever is not to give up a big play.
Yeah. You know? Let's get back to a net zero.
Right, exactly.
They've been a net negative the last 2 weeks, and it's killing them.
Right.
And, my God, if they try to pin another kickoff back, I might lose my mind. Like, the way that they're trying to pin kickoffs to the corner, I get it. You're trying to get the offense a little bit backed up. But your defense hasn't let up a single touchdown drive of 75 yards all year.
Yeah.
And I think they only let up like two last year. And one of them was an 80-yard touchdown run against Iowa when the game was basically over anyway. Get a touchback.
Right.
Let the defense play. Like, stop doing this to your defense. It's that would be, to me, if I'm a defensive player in Wisconsin, the part where I just couldn't handle it. Because it's like, why are we making this harder than it has to be?
Right.
We gave up a kick return doing this, and we gave up the kickoff out of bounds last week.
Yeah.
I would lose it. So, all that being said, let's jump down to our Big Ten picks. Last week, I went 6-2. Jim went 3-5. Our only second losing week combined, or not mine, but of the two of us all year.
Wow.
So, on the year, I'm 30-21-1. Jim is 28-23-1. Only five games on the slate this week here in the Big Ten, but some pretty good ones. Maryland is going to Ohio State. Ohio State is a 21-point favorite. We are both on Ohio State. Maryland losing Dante Demas.
They got
beat up physically against Iowa. That's not a game I don't think you can recover from quickly, and then you know Ohio State's going to try to do the same things. So we're both on Iowa or Ohio State with the 21 points there. Even though I will say, I give Mike Locksley credit. His team plays hard. Iowa was just much better than them in all the turnovers last week.
Yeah, and I think Ohio State is finally starting to figure some stuff out. Again, the thing that it's easy to forget with Ohio State is they did have so many young guys
at
skill positions. And we probably should have seen this coming to some degree, that it was going to take some time to kind of build in this season. And I think they've reached kind of the midway point of the season. I think they are finally figuring some stuff out.
Sure. And exciting here. That's the only game we agree on going forward here. So next one here is Michigan State going to Rutgers. Michigan State up to, I think, 11th in the country, if I remember the AP poll correctly. Michigan State is a 5-point favorite. I'm going to lay the 5 with Michigan State. And honestly, it's because Rutgers, I don't think, is going to be able to recover physically from the physicality of that Ohio State game last week. And I think it's going to linger over. I don't think they're going to get blown out like they did last week. But only laying 5, Michigan State's got to win by a touchdown. I'm really, really impressed with how Mel Tucker's team is playing defense. Like, we've talked multiple times about Kenneth Walker, and he's leading the country in rushing yards, which is kind of outstanding. But I think that this defense, I don't think they're going to be able to blow a team out, but I don't think they're going to let Rutgers, you know, get back late in the game. So I think winning by a touchdown is reasonable.
The reason I took Rutgers, I think it'll be a close game. The pride factor for Rutgers after last week, I thought, you know, that they would bounce back. That's the only reason. And I think Michigan State is due for a letdown at some point.
Sure.
As good as they've been, I just wonder how real it is and if they can keep doing this consistently. And this would seem like the type of game you're going to get to Piscataway. I just feel like it's ripe for a letdown.
That's entirely fair. And then I do kind of have to check myself at times on Michigan State. It's like, all right, who have they beaten so far? And that Miami win continues to look not as impressive. And so I think that's a fair reasoning, but I'll still go with Michigan State winning this one. Marquee matchup here in the Big Ten, and really I think the marquee matchup in college football this week, Penn State's going to Iowa. Iowa is a 2-point favorite at home, which is a little bit disrespectful because I'm surprised that that's not a full 3, especially with how raucous Iowa gets when they're good. If this was a night game in Iowa, it would be even cooler. They'd do a blackout, and I'm sure it's going to be nuts regardless. But I'm going to go with Penn State because I honestly think they're right there. I think they're the best team that's not named Georgia or Alabama this year.
Wow.
I said it right after that game, and I continue to believe it. I think we're going to get further away from Wisconsin should have beating Penn State being like a feather in the cap, even if the season goes poorly, because I think Penn State's that good.
A signature loss.
Yeah, exactly. a great moral loss.
Yes. I do wonder, like, looking back at that game, had Wisconsin won that game, if that just, you know, how much did that game take out of them, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
It's a fair question.
Yeah, so I you can never replay games, but I wonder. I'm taking Iowa. They've really answered every test this season, and the home field advantage just is the only reason. Like, I think these teams are pretty even.
Sure.
I'm just going to give it to the home team.
Entirely fair. My reason for not picking Iowa is that offense is right down by Wisconsin in terms of production this year. They're in, like, the 90s in college football. So I just don't think they're going to be able to match explosiveness. And that's not saying that Penn State's going to go up and down the field, but it's a little bit like what Penn State did in Wisconsin. They're probably not going to be efficient, but they're going to get that one play to Jahan Dotson. He's going to make a guy miss. Like, they're going to get a couple of plays in the game that score, and I don't think Iowa's going to be able to respond to that. With a Penn State defense that's not statistically great, I don't know their exact rankings, but I don't think it's getting the credit for what they're doing against some pretty solid competition so far.
I think they can rattle Sean Clifford a little bit.
That's fair, too. I think that's going to be an awesome game. We'll both be in Champaign watching probably a punt fest rock fight. Yeah right. So, next game here, Michigan is going to Nebraska. Michigan is a 3-point favorite at Nebraska, which is honestly kind of shocking with how Michigan, the game Michigan's coming off, the run they're on, and I'm saying Nebraska's playing pretty well. Just, I'm surprised that line's not bigger, honestly. So, that's why I'm on Michigan. I just also just refuse to choose Nebraska when they're playing a good team. But I do think Michigan's for real. They're going to be able to run a little bit better than they were against Wisconsin, even though Nebraska's front's playing pretty well too. So I'm going to take Michigan there because it's only 3. I'm not saying it's a great pick, but I like it better than picking Nebraska at any time.
Yeah, that's fair. I just think I've seen improvement from Nebraska. I feel like something is turning around there, and the atmosphere, I think, will help them. I think Nebraska, I think they win this game outright. I'm not sold on Michigan. I'm really not sold on Cade McNamara, so that's part of my reasoning there. I don't know. I think Nebraska wins this game.
No, I think that's fair, and the one thing I will say with Nebraska turning, like you're seeing the things about turning it around, you look at their Illinois loss, you look at their Michigan State loss, they handed the other team that game, or both those games. Right. So if you take 2 losses and throw them in the win column for them, would you feel a lot better about them? Probably. They're probably ranked if those 2 things happen, right. If we're being honest. So I think that's fair, but I'll still lay the Michigan with the 3 there. That's going to be a crazy environment because I believe that's a night game. I think that's 6:30.
I think you're right.
Yeah, so that's going to be nuts. All right. Last game of the week, Wisconsin going to Illinois. And, Jamie, you're going to have to probably hit me off this one. I don't know why.
I'm surprised.
I don't know why I'm doing it. Wisconsin's a 10-point favorite. I think this is just kitchen sink. You have to win this game and probably need to do it convincingly. This is Paul Chris knowing that the seat's getting hotter. Like, Paul Chris cussed in a press conference for, I think, the first time ever that I've been here, I know. But I don't know ever with him.
No, it was not... You know, I'd asked him a question, and the answer wasn't really going anywhere. And all of a sudden, that last part was like, bang, he says, I don't think we can say it. And he said, it starts with a B. Not the worst of swear words, but yeah, it was nice to see him show some fire. You know, yeah. I think that's kind of what I think that's what a lot of people are waiting for and wanting from him. And it wasn't a great question, like, are you angry? Is there a better word to describe your emotions right now? But it got a really good answer, and we know he's angry. We know he's frustrated. I just kind of wanted him to verbalize that a little bit.
Yeah. I just think that for Wisconsin, this is a gut check time game. Like, Illinois is not good. I think that if you're a Wisconsin player, if it's right, wrong, and different, doesn't matter. You just have to say to yourself, we have lost to 3 of the best teams in college football this year. We are a good team. We have made so many mistakes in those games. We probably should have won 2 of them. Like, let's go put the beat down on somebody that's not as good. Is that true? I don't know. Doesn't really matter. That's what you have to think. So that's where I'm going to believe that mentality and that mindset works. I think they covered 10. Maybe it's a push. I'm predicting a 10-point win,
okay,
which is kind of a lame thing to do, but I'm going to take Wisconsin there. Don't feel great about it, but I just think this is a everything, all hands on deck type of game, have to do something against a team that's not as good as you.
I think Wisconsin wins. I just don't, it's hard for me to believe it's going to be double digits.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at. I think it's going to be ugly. I think the defense is probably going to have to force 2 or 3 turnovers. Might have to score on its own. You know, it'd be nice if we knew who the quarterback was too. I think that's,
yeah, I was
that's
gonna, we're going to wrap up with that. All of this about Wisconsin this week is kind of caveated with, assuming Graham Mertz plays.
Yeah.
The fact that Graham Mertz was there to talk to us on Monday, to me, is a really good sign. They think he can play.
Agreed.
My question then will be, will he be able to mentally block out the fact that his ribs, his side, his chest hurts, and not trying to get hit? Because like I mentioned before, how well he did under pressure and taking some hits to deliver throws when they weren't blocking well. You probably have to do it again against Illinois. They're going to blitz. They're going to try to get after him again. Can he do that mentally, knowing that it's going to hurt even worse? We'll see. But I think Mertz plays. The fact that he talked to us on Monday was a big sign to me. I think he's out there. But if Chase Wolf's out there, definitely Illinois.
Would love to see if Illinois does blitz a lot that Wisconsin flips that against him, and a Kendrick Pryor or a DK or a Danny Davis,
right,
turns a short pass into a big player and they score that way.
That's legal? You're allowed to do that?
Possible.
We've really only seen Kendrick Pryor do it so far.
Right. And well, DK's catch the other night, I was like, wait, that can happen? Like, this offense can actually do that? And I was like, yeah. So that's where we're at with this offense.
It is. All right, so make sure you guys are on Madison.com. We've extended our great deal. You can get 6 months of coverage for $1. That gets you through the rest of the Badger season, the bowl game that we've discussed that might be in peril, but gets you through that, most of basketball season and hockey season as well. So a ton of great Badger coverage for $1 for 6 months on Madison.com. Jim's got his open gym column you can read on Madison.com this week. He's got a ton of Packer coverage, too.
A true Oatsy weekend for me. This is
going to be interesting.
This is a Friday Milwaukee Brewers game one, fly out Saturday morning. I'll cover the Badgers on Saturday and drive over to Cincinnati, cover the Packers on Sunday. Back here Monday morning. If all works out well, we'll see.
So get on Madison.com. Make sure you pay off Jim for all that work and travel by reading his stuff on Madison.com and in the paper as well. So for Jim Pozzini, I'm Colton Bartholomew. Thank you guys very much for listening.